So, the next set of boxes that we're going to talk about are Flux boxes, published by Fluxus New York.
Mm-hmm.
What's the time period of all of these works?
These works are beginning around 1965. Fluxus began as an art movement in 1961. That's the date that most people cite. It coincided with, the identification is, was seized upon by George Machunas, already mentioned, a Lithuanian, graphic designer, who was, moved to America, worked for, Knoll, was in the army. And during his stay in the army, he in Europe, Germany in particular, continued to be engaged in art design, and his personal interests in art history and research in general of cultural development, and basically. He and a fellow artist, Jackson Macklow, came up with the publication An Anthology, an idea for the publication An Anthology, which was published, I guess, in 61 or 62, the reprint in 1970 with some alterations. In any case, these boxes that you see here, most of them, were published by Fluxus. The imprint is Fluxus, and I'm only emphasizing this.
It's 130.
Because artists associated with Fluxus produced unique works. They also produced editions with other publishers. For example, edition Vice Versan, Wolfgang Fielisch. The Something Else Press published some editions. Edition Mat Mo, Spury, Gallery der Spiegel published editions. There are plenty of, there are a certain number of European publishers and European museums as publishers that published, that did editions with artists associated with Fluxus over the course of Fluxus time, which would be 61 to 78, coinciding with the sort of the end date, coinciding with the death of George Machunas. So basically what you see here are examples, some examples of Flux boxes by, a range of artists associated with Fluxus. However, this is the sort of product end of Fluxus. The movement was primarily, I would say, involved with giving concerts and doing performance evenings and public spectacles in general. So this idea of producing these limited, unlimited edition boxes. Was the sort of product side of the movement. Machunas, as I said already, worked for Knoll, and so, you know, designing things in general would have come easy enough for him. That's what he did for the army as well. I think he was in the sort of design corps, although don't quote me on that. And the way these boxes got produced is as follows. Machunas would ask for ideas for boxes, asking specific people or asking specific artists, or the artists would just volunteer this material, these ideas to him. Mm-hmm. That was basically, communication was done primarily by the mail from, Ben Vautier in Nice. Or Filiu in, also in Nice, or Eric Anderson, in Copenhagen, and yeah. Brecht, when he was, I guess he would have been most likely at that point in New York, when most of these boxes were done. Kasugi, again, you know, some sort of communication in Japan, etc., etc. Again, the...
The artists were asked via the mail, but then they were produced at Fluxus with instructions, or
Basically,
the artists produce a mock-up and then send that. I guess it probably varies.
I think it's variable. I know that Jeff Berner had a prototype for an edition that he wanted to do, which never got done. But I think that in general, what went on is. The event was described by the artists via the mail. I doubt in most cases there was an actual prototype generated. Machunas would more or less go with the artist's intention with some creative license on his part. In addition, all the label, the tops to the boxes, all have rather fanciful labels, which Machunas designed all of them. And what you see here primarily are editions that were published in New York by the Flux shop there. However, the Watts box in the cardboard box that's in the in this drawer that you're looking into now. That box was generated by De Ridder's European mail order warehouse. You can tell because the box is not one of the range of boxes that was used in New York. Most of the material...
They're mostly plastic boxes.
Right. And the plastic over the range of time that Machunas was producing these, when Machunas and Fluxus was producing these, changed also. Early on, they supposedly... the quality of these plastic boxes was better. They were stronger. Over time, they changed in size, and also they became also less sturdy.
So were they a ready-made, or was it like a company that was working with Fluxus to
no,
were
most,
they were found?
No, the material Machunas would buy at some sort of shop that sold these sorts of things on Canal Street. Maybe there was more than one, but he did his shopping mostly on Canal Street. And which is near where he was living. Machunas was living somewhere, I guess, at that time in Soho. He was one thing that I guess a lot of people don't know about Machunas is that he also was one of the people that early on let's just say, colonized Soho. So, you know, it's a good while before, you know, Mata Clark and food and all of that. And this is a earlier moment in the history of what Soho ended up being.
Do you have any idea what the Flux warehouse would have been like?
It would have been just some loft that
just
he
loft.
Yeah that
and
he
it would
lived
be
in.
Him and a couple people.
Well, it was probably his place, and there were various people that that put these boxes together with him. I understand Chico Shiomi put a lot of these boxes together when she was in New York for a period of time. And I think Barbara Moore was also working on these boxes as being like, the secretary or something of Fluxus. And there are other people that did lend a hand in the production of these. When you look at these boxes, I guess the question is, why boxes? And the kind of most, one of the classic Fluxus complete works boxes was this Water Yam by George Machunas. And the idea of the box in this case, in regards to the Water Yam, as well as, let's just say, Watts events and this sort of Shiomi events box, is that... the idea that there could be a container that could be added to was an integral aspect of the decision to contain these works, which are considered to be complete works by the artists, in a box, because a box can be opened and added to. Okay, so the way these complete works events boxes were supposed to function is they were published in a certain number of cards. There may be further inserts in them. For example, the Watts Events box sometimes includes a certain number of cards, but then it might also include some fake food, a fake food multiple by mm-hmm. Watts. Okay, but this version doesn't, and so they're variable according to what was available, what was in stock, and how much material was actually published at that point. So when you read the Fluxus Codex, or when you look at the Fluxus etc., and you try to collate or try to understand what period of time your box is coming from, or whether or not the box that you've got, the version that you've got, is complete, you see that the number of cards, event cards, varies substantially. So this is an early 70s box.
Back to why in a box, and the idea that this is a complete thing, but it's a complete presentation, but it's also to be added to.
Right.
What do you mean when you say that? Do you mean that it's a performance to be experienced, but then it is completed by someone who thereafter experiences
no.
and adds to
no,
it?
No, that's not what I mean. So, for example, and let's just not use this as really the example, except that this box is one version of George Brecht's Water Yam. This version...
And there are multiple versions.
There's many versions. There's like eight versions of this box. And I guess what I'm trying to say about that this is a complete works box by Brecht is this is a box that supposedly at the moment of time of publication represents all the events, the scores for events mm-hmm. that he had published up to this point in time. Okay, so they were contained in this box. But the idea is that after this period of time, if five more events were published, they could be sent to the owner of this box and inserted into it.
Oh.
Unlike a book, which you can't add a page once it's already bound.
Okay.
So that was one of the reasons why they use these boxes.
And did you receive installments if you were a collector?
Yeah, you were supposed to. I mean, certainly somebody like Hans Zohm in Stuttgart, outside of Stuttgart, did, because he was tracking the movement closely. And certainly there are other probably large, big collectors, not that there were that many collectors of Fluxus early on, but there were certainly people that were purchasing from the Flux warehouse in New York that would have been, the Flux shop in New York, would have gotten sent new cards when, in fact, they were published. Or in any case, that was the idea, okay?
Uh-huh.
That's the idea of one of the reasons why these events were contained in a box, okay, mm-hmm. That they could be
and
added
so,
to.
Other examples that are a little bit like George Brecht's has performance scores. It has words. It has games and actions. Some of these others have just a stack of objects or objects.
Right. Well,
in
I mean,
box.
we're just yes.
Yeah.
This is a box that's made primarily. This is essentially. A box that contains most of Brecht's event scores for, to be performed by the reader, to be performed by the performer, whatever, okay?
Uh-huh.
So that's how that functions. It's more or less a reading box or a box to be performed.
Uh-huh.
Something like this, the Games and Puzzles box, one of a series of Games and Puzzles boxes by George Brecht. This contains one event card for the following event, Black Ball Puzzle. Change smaller black ball into larger and larger black ball into smaller. Make both black balls the same size. Okay? So, I mean, it's an event. This is the event score to be performed with these balls. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So it's a game, all right, to be distinguished. So it is an event, but it has the makings to play the game, to play the event. This box, a suicide kit, a Flux suicide kit by Ben Vautier, Essentially, there isn't the score, you might say, if you want to call it that, is on the top of the box, and what is contained therein are certainly things which objects which could be used or suggest ways of committing suicide. You know, slitting your wrist, electrocution, asphyxiation, etc., etc. Some of the events are also rather, you know, short and sweet. This is an example by the Swedish artist Per Kirkeby, who early on had some association with Fluxus, his work, his Flux Box Flux Finger Sweater, essentially contains the sort of the finger sweater. Lovely.
Hold on. One more.
Again, these boxes were published in an unlimited edition. However, these boxes are consequently extremely limited in some cases because they were more or less produced on demand. In other words, they may have had a stock, and once the stock had run out, they wouldn't necessarily replenish unless there was market interest. And as Fluxus wasn't particularly popular during its prime time, for that matter, even today, in terms of collecting, you know, that you don't find these boxes terribly often, or for that matter, I think that the editions are the things that are much harder to find in, compared to the printed matter generated by the movement.
It's 145.
And I mean, obviously, the unique works by these artists are even though the production would be, for some of these artists, not Ben Vautier, but for some of these artists would be more limited in terms of numbers, they might be easier to find, you might say, despite the fact that they're unique works, just because there was this built-in preciousness to those works, while these being $1.50 at the time and made out of plastic box that were often contained in plastic boxes, these things often were, let's just say, they were and are still marginalized by art appreciators, and these things break. You know, these are very easily broken. Hmm. This box by Ben called Holes is basically made up of objects and images with holes. Okay. As previously mentioned, Fluxus editions are artists associated with Fluxus produced editions with other publishers during the heyday of Fluxus, and this is an example of one of the editions produced by another publisher. This publisher is the Something Else Press, and Dick Higgins and the Something Else Press. Higgins was one of the early participants in Fluxus, and basically his decision to begin the imprint Something Else Press started because Michunas had been, let's just say, stalling in producing an edition with him. And I forget what the edition is. I think the work was Jefferson's Birthday Postface, which I believe is the first book published by Something Else Press, his own book. And basically, because he didn't get that going, that is, Michunas, Higgins, one afternoon, became very upset and essentially called up his wife at the time, Allison Knowles, and told her that they were going to, he was going to start this press. And I guess somehow between the two of them, they came up with the name, the Something Else Press. There was like there's a clever...
So it's something else besides Fluxus. Possibly.
Could be, yeah. you know, this notion of when you look at the sort of primary text on Fluxus collections, you're overwhelmed by looking at one series of books concerning one collection, and that is the Gilbert and Lila Silverman collection ends up being, in terms of the primary literature on the subject, in terms of, let's just say, a glossary of, you know, what was done by the movement, you get only one view, okay? And that is that the scope of what is presented in the Fluxus Codex, which is an Abrams book covering the Silverman collection, you realize that the scope of the collection is material that somehow was touched by Maciunas. Uh-huh. So, in other words, if material published by Vice Versa, or material published by Something Else Press, by a Fluxus artist, uh-huh, during Fluxus time, 1968, for example, being a year, that would not be within the purview of that collection or what was presented in the Fluxus Codex. So without making a certain kind of effort, one might get the idea that Fluxus was simply stated those things that Maciunas orchestrated one way or another, that is, with the festivals that he organized and the concerts that he organized and the editions. But there is a prodigious amount of production beyond what was published by Fluxus. And, you know, the Something Else Press worked with, you know, probably a dozen artists associated with Fluxus, and published, besides artist books, with them, some editions, some multiples. And this is one of them. This is the edition published with Wolf Vostell.
Vostell being also associated with this movement, but from a different place altogether.
Yeah, well Fluxus, the artists associated with Fluxus are from all over the world. It's an international mm-hmm. group of artists. You've got artists from France, you've got artists from Germany, you've got artists from Czechoslovakia, Milan Knizak, uh-huh. You've got the Japanese artists, High Red Center, Cheko Shiomi, Kasugi, then you've got people from Denmark, etc., you know, Kupka. So it's an international group of artists. So they're from all over the place. However, there is some kind of larger distinction in talking about Vostell, in that Vostell is often also talked about in relationship to décollage and happenings.
Décollage is a term that he coined.
Exactly.
Right?
It's a term that he coined, but it was always décollage happenings, actually. And Vostell had a magazine called Décollage.
Yeah.
That was, you know, from the same vintage as what we're looking at here. It's a 60s publication. And it again, like you might say a Fluxus yearbox, or like an anthology, it contained page works or contributions by artists associated with Fluxus, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it was an artist-driven magazine in that the contributions were essentially generated by artists for publication. And the publisher was also an artist.
So the artists contained in Décollage, were there any crossover between artists artists associated with George Maciunas and Fluxus?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I tried to say that a moment ago. But basically, that was also a huge problem for the artists associated with Fluxus, in that how they could navigate these personalities. Vostell, mm-hmm. Higgins, Machunas. They were, and for that matter, Charlotte Mormon. Machunas was very territorial and wanted to sort of restrict Fluxus production, especially things that he had published as a Fluxus work. He wanted to somehow control the reception or the playing of it. So he would get upset if a Fluxus work was performed at, you know, an annual avant-garde festival organized by Mormon without being properly credited, or if it wasn't, I mean, if they weren't compensated for use of the work. Anyway, there was a lot of...
So these Fluxus published boxes were sold for $1.35 a piece, but he was also, he was very concerned with people not stealing his ideas at the same time, so it's just interesting.
I wasn't stealing his ideas because he's publishing the works of these other, these miscellaneous, these artists. It was more about somehow retaining some control and I guess there being some integrity to, you know, the Fluxus imprint. And I guess there also factors in to be this compensation detail that there was some sort of use fee, if I'm not incorrect, for the performing of these or the publication of these scores. And as Machunas was always scrambling around for money, as were many of the artists associated with Fluxus, that it's you can understand hypothetically why he'd feel that way. But in any case, what I'm trying to get at...
They were a part of the same movement, but they were all competitors and all sort of had a certain way of seeing it or a certain way that they were... moving the movement forward.
I guess. I think people, the participants maybe would view what their association with other collaborators as, I'm not sure if they'd find it to be some sort of competition or not. I think that certainly there was some issue with alliances here and there. And I think most of these problems occurred because of Machunas and his point of view as to the kind of I think he had very clear ideas about how he saw the movement going, and I think many of these artists probably had they were less invested in those concerns and more interested in the doing and the sort of publishing. Again, with Vostell, and I guess I got waylaid a little bit in sort of addressing some of those other points, that when speaking to Alan Capro about this particular point about what's happenings or what's décollage happenings and what's Fluxus, how can you distinguish, okay? Alan told me, obviously this is 30 or so years down the line, but he said to me that there really wasn't any real difference in terms of what was a happenings work and what was a Fluxus work. It was really just about how it was positioned by, Machunas and how it laid out
his
that there, yeah,
way.
It wasn't really so much built into the work that there were these distinctions. I think you could maybe generally say that happenings were a little more expressionistic, let's say, than décollage happenings. Happenings were more expressionistic than Fluxus events, which tended to be rather short, sweet, and tidy, that the sort of scores were rather simple. And then we're often sometimes it depends, you know, certainly Yoko Ono, but I think that the performance context was also quite different in that, to go to a Fluxus festival to see a number of Fluxus scores produced, they were often done rapid fire, one following the next. They were going 30 seconds at a time or something. And happenings, you usually saw a happening. You know, you'd go to some happening by Capro or some happening by Oldenburg, and there was more of a duration, you might say. And so that may be one way to distinguish them. But like fundamentally, I guess, Alan suggested that there weren't these great differences between what is a happening and what is a fluxus work. Anyway, this Décollage Happenings box, published by the Something Else Press, contains reproductions of Capro's Happenings posters. Capro was a fantastic designer as well, and that's, I think, it was his day job. It also includes a book that sets out his happenings score-wise. It contains a print by Vostell, as well as a piece of matzah and some bromo seltzer. So, and it's contained in this...
another complete experience, yeah, in a way, in a box.
Exactly. And again, you could say it has the possibilities of being, in some way, an exhibition in a box, in that, you know, those posters, there's like 12 or something in there, that could make up the wall element. Mm-hmm. Then there are these objects. Certainly it's a certain kind of show, it hypothetically is a show in a box. What time is it?
1:59.
I think following along this short tour of Fluxus, we might follow this by an introduction to SMS. Shit Must Stop, published by the Letter Edged in Black Press. This magazine, this artist periodical, began publication in, I believe, 1968.
It's 2:00.
And continued only for 5 issues. And number 6. Gee, why can't I find number 1?
This is a really unique box.
Yeah, well, okay, number 1, finally. It only was the last one I chose. This magazine, this artist periodical, was the notion of the artist Bill Copley, William Copley, who was son of the founder of Copley Publications. I guess his father owned newspapers, and in any case, he didn't have to work, it seems, and he was able to parlay this magazine, short-lived, as well as a full art career on his own. He basically could be thought of as a late surrealist painter, that is Copley himself, and consequently he was his place in the art world in the 1960s was one where he had a lot of contact with, he had contact with a large range of artists. So what is particularly interesting about SMS is the fact that the range of artists included, invited to participate, was far-ranging. You had people that were associated with land art, conceptual art, pop art, post-minimalism, surrealism. I mean, there's editions here by Marcel Duchamp, so Dada, there's contributions by Man Ray, or a contribution by Man Ray. Same thing, Merit Oppenheim, but then you've got a multiple here by Oldenburg, a multiple by the pop artist Mel Ramos, Roy Lichtenstein. Anyway, it's an interesting overview of the art world in 1968. In fact, there are some contributions here which are, they're not even artists. For example, issue one includes a contribution by the gallerist Julian Levy and the curator Caspar Koenig. It's curious. In any case, the box element to this publication is really more a transport vehicle than anything else, in that the actual magazine is contained in a folder. All of them are contained in a folder, and these folders are considered to be works as well. In fact, there's one folder.
So they're not glued in.
Their contents are loose. And
the outside box was to be so that it could be mailed.
Exactly.
Mailed
the box aspect of this is really strictly generated for transport.
But these weren't transported, the ones that you have.
These particular copies were not mailed. I purchased these sometime in the 80s, but when they were initially released, they were sent in the mail.
Okay.
And the box was the mailer. They didn't come in it. The box itself was the mailer. In fact, a prudent owner of these boxes, of this periodical today, would remove the box from these...
Because they're yellowing.
Right, because they're not archival. It's cardboard box that specifically has, SMS-related information on it. But they're... Unlike the Aspen magazine boxes, or unlike the Flux boxes, the box element, unlike the Finley Earthship box, the box element to this periodical, is simply stated for purposes of mailing and nothing more. The work is contained in the box, opposed to the box being a part of the work. Okay,
and could you speak to the title?
SMS, shit must stop. I mean, I don't know.
Is it political, or is it somehow related to the artists that were selected?
I can't speak to why this periodical went by the name Shit Must Stop. I mean, although most people don't refer to it that way, they refer to it as SMS.
Uh-huh.
But, I can't really speak to that point. Also, this SMS, I always assumed, or I always thought of this as a periodical. It was sent out periodically. But as I see in some promotional materials for an exhibition that was done of this collection later, it was referred to as by this gallerist as a collection of original multiples. And what you've got here is essentially these containers that were sent out periodically that contained a folder of mixed material. And the mixed material could be what might be characterized as a multiple, what might be characterized as a flyer or as a broadside or as a leaf. There are also essentially artist book-like publications in this. So it's a far range. You could also say that there are contributions here that are essentially prints. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And this like Aspen also has a cataloging or numbering system, or at least a collation system that appears on all of the colophon pages.
Right. There is a kind of index, but the contributions themselves are, to my knowledge, not identified with by any marking. There's a table of contents per issue which sets out by shape exactly what is in the publication. And in most cases, it's fairly obvious if one has familiarity with contemporary art from this period of time. Yeah.
Wow.
The level of the fact that these are so disparate in form, the contributions, that is, and that this had such, and the selection of artists is what makes this, the fact that there are artists from so many different camps, makes it a particularly interesting view of contemporary art at this moment. I think it's, that this is the Cristo. Anyway. As I tried to mention previously, outside of the box, the sort of shipping box, every aspect of this publication besides the table of contents is identified as a work by the contributor. So all of these folder covers are works by various artists. This one is by Archwager. These are blips on the cover.
Oh my gosh.
Issue number 2 has this this sort of this work by Duchamp that relates to his rotoreliefs. At a certain point in time, it was said that Copley became disenfranchised with the project because he, besides the limited success monetarily of this magazine, it seems like there was the story goes that there was a petty cash box that was available to the artists working at that moment on an issue. And I guess that petty cash box was typically empty. And I think it just upset him at a certain time, at a certain point, and he decided to stop publication. And he gave, I guess, the remaining edition, the remaining quantity of the edition, which was likely substantial, to the New Museum in New York, who thereafter... this is the Liechtenstein hat, who thereafter kept it in storage for a period of time, and it wasn't until sometime in the... What's the date of this publication? I think it wasn't until sometime in the 90s, early 90s or late 80s, that there was a gallerist that... was assigned or what somehow did a more public offering of these of this periodical, and there was a number of shows that were organized, and these things kind of had there was a resuscitation and interest in these in this periodical. I would say, if I was going to cite one example of a periodical or a multiple package or, whatever you want to call this, a publication that could sum up a period of time in terms of the various forms of representative forms of art being made at a certain moment, that this publication would be a fantastic teaching aid. In that it really covers the full range of relatively thorough range of artists associated, the artists working at that moment, both mid career.
The product level is so high. There's plastic elements. There are multiples. They're printed, but Things that you wouldn't expect to see.
Right. There's nothing handmade. There's nothing handmade here. This is all.
Some of it looks like handwritten.
It's a reproduction.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, there's nothing here that's hand generated. It's all reproductions. It's all fabricated. This is a, there's nothing handy about this in terms of the end product.
Where did this one come
from? It doesn't matter. I've seen an exhibition of this magazine, which, ends up coming in six small-ish envelopes.
But it could take a whole room.
Exactly. It would. And when I've seen it in a framed, contained presentation format, it takes up an entire gallery.
It's
so
gorgeous.
It's a great teaching tool for within the context of a print room or as a museum exhibition, as a single work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where are we?
We have 15 minutes until the hour's up.
Okay. Well, let's move on then. Let's start a discussion of in the late 60s, I guess this edition is from 67. Yeah, 67. Joseph Beuys had an exhibition in 1967 at the City Museum of Mönchengladbach. This exhibition marks the beginning of a series of catalog cassettes published by the institution. It was Beuys' idea to do a kind of multiple catalog type publication on the inauguration of his one-person show. And so what he did is he came up with a format that I guess was
it's 215.
Relatively easy to reproduce in terms of a form, this modest box size, and he produced this early this multiple incorporating felt and the brown cross, the kind of icon of one of the icons of the artists in the sort of chocolate color. In any case, and it's also cut into a form that relates to this sort of energy form that you see in works later, like the multiple that he did called The Element. But in any case, the idea of this box edition set was a collaboration between Beuys and the museum director at the time, Johannes Clauters. And from this point in time, most one-person and certain group show exhibitions, if not all of them during a certain period of time, there was a box edition that was created. Depending if the artist was alive or dead, and the engagement of the artist would depend on whether or not there was a multiple or a real sort of artist contribution. For example, the Beuys, there was a clear interaction, in addition, these boxes are, in general, they were published in editions of around 250, 330, something like this. There are only two boxes that are different in that they were particularly limited. One box by Stanley Brown, which is more or less unknown that he did this box, was published in an edition of one, so it's a unique box. And the other box that was a different edition number was the Burton Hill Abesher box, which contained a number of photographs. That box, although the stated edition is something like 36 or 42, I forget right now, that box, that sort of sets what is considered to be the complete set at this point. of these, because this set of City Museum boxes by Mook and Gladbach are often collected as sets, and but the obviously the lowest number sets the sort of number of possible complete sets. The brown box is more or less it's more or less not known that it is even exists, so it's not ever mentioned as being part of the set.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, yeah.
And I guess how is it really an addition anyway if it's a unique?
If it's just one,
right?
You said that it was Boys' idea to begin this boxed edition, and then Johannes Clatter's thereafter published 30 or 40.
I think there's something like 36 boxes making up the set, and it was Boys' idea to produce something that was multiple life that could be contained in a box, and I guess it was Clatter's that decided that it was a great idea, that this format worked, and that
and he could follow that through and just continue it, put it together any way that it makes
exactly
sense.
I mean,
the boxes
do vary substantially in terms of the actual what the box is made out of, in that they changed over time because of materials and also because of contributions ranged. But for example, the Boys, as you can see, is made out of this sort of heavier cardboard and is rather sturdy. However, a box done, the box for the exhibition of Piero Manzoni is, completely different. It's a box that is made out of very malleable plastic, this was done in the spirit of Manzoni, as it was already dead in 1969. This is an edition of 440 and functions more, because the artist is dead, obviously, had nothing to do with the conception of this publication. So it's more or less done in the spirit thereof, in the spirit of Manzoni. This, because of the translucency, to me, it sort of connects to a book that was one of the last things he did, published by a publisher in, I forget if it's Berlin or Dusseldorf, named Jess Pedersen, it's a book that's made up of clear plastic pages, and so I see there being some sort of relationship to that book in this regard. Other examples of artists that that contributed, you have boxes here by a number of the artists that are associated with Arte Povera, a certain number of boxes by artists associated with conceptual art. How the artists use the box is also quite variable. For example, the Belgian artist Panamarenko made use of the box format quite differently than most of the other artists, in that it becomes a real crucial detail to the piece itself. There's a kind of, you might say, communication-like, what this work actually concerns, I'm not positive, but it's one senses that it has something to do with communication, and the top of the box connects to the bottom of the box, and it's by tape, and it's a long piece of string, and he's really using the box itself. It goes beyond just a containing unit, but it becomes literally part of the piece. The front matter and the back matter of the box is found on the top and bottom, while the work is contained inside. Okay. Mm-hmm. Another artist that used the box particularly from this set is the artist Palermo, Blinky Palermo. This Palermo box essentially is an exhibition catalog, but for the fact that on the top cover of the box there is a minimally represented drawing on the cover. It's a kind of addition drawing. They're all basically the same, but they're the work itself is to be seen on the top of the box. It's not exactly the box is not exactly working the same way as one typically has seen the boxes being used in the history of multiples thus far. What I'm showing you.
So this one, the artwork is on the outside of the box, and the exhibition material is on the inside.
Correct. What's on the inside is basically reproductions of works in the show. And some sort of short essay by Clotters. Mm-hmm. Okay. Another artist that used this box in a very particular way, that the box itself, is Gerhard Richter, German painter, associated with capitalism and realism. His box, more or less... standard on the top and bottom cover. When you look on the underside of the top cover, you see that there's a monochrome, gray monochrome painting by Richter to be found for his exhibition of Grau Builder gray paintings at gray pictures at the museum. Inside, you've got a short essay by Clotters. This is an edition of 330 with reproductions of these gray paintings, gray pictures. In terms of institutions that had a lineage in creating edition works, I would say the City Museum of Mönchengladbach was one of the preeminent and still is publishing today, in that beyond this set of artist editions, they continue to publish multiples and prints as available to members or subscribers of a particular, it's like a club or society. In Germany in particular, there is this history of this kind of editioning. The Kunstvereins, the Kunsthalls, as well as certain of the city museums, all have publishing programs of this sort. It is curious that when I think of publishers in Europe, specifically in Germany, compared to when I think about publishers of prints and editions in America, it seems like I think of mostly institutions in Germany that are publishing these sorts of things, opposed to print publishers and print publishers and editioners. There isn't really the same thing as a ULAE and a Gemini and the this and the that. In Europe, it seems like those publishers are maybe more regular publishing is done via galleries who have a publishing arm, opposed to publishers that are just strictly generating prints and multiples. I'm sure there are examples that escape my memory at this point of. Publishers doing this sort of work, but it just seems like in the numbers there seems to be more in America, and that in America there seems to be a different way of the museums, institutions seem to be less engaged in this sort of activity. I guess I guess another box that's worth showing is this box by Richard Long. Like a number of artists from this generation, Long, Lawrence Weiner, Hamish Fulton, Richard Nonis, Saul LeWitt, a number of these artists were very were quite interested in producing publications to go along with exhibitions. In the case of Lawrence Weiner, often the publication was the exhibition,
mm-hmm.
Or what ends up being representative of the exhibition. But you know, a lot of these artists that I just mentioned were quite busy making artist books. And in the case of Long, for this exhibition, his contribution to his box, his edition, was basically this artist book made up of photos of works, sculptures that he did during for the years 1966 through 1970.